Welcome back, everybody. It's time for another deep dive, and this time we're taking a look at the work of Maite Garagordibil, who's a professor at the University of the Basque Country. Now, she's been a leading voice in child psychology and education for almost 30 years. And we've got this fascinating collection of her TV appearances. It'll be really interesting to see what they reveal about how these fields have evolved over the last three decades.
It really is like a time capsule. You know, we can look back at these interviews chronologically and trace not only Garagordibil's own research journey, but also sort of see how public awareness and understanding of key issues related to children and adolescents have changed over time.
Exactly. So let's jump right in. We're going to start way back in 1996 with Garagordibil discussing the importance of choosing the right toys. What struck me is how even then she emphasized the connection between play and a child's development, something that's become even more central to educational approaches today.
Totally. And it's fascinating to see how she frames toys not just as entertainment, but as tools for learning and social emotional growth. And even in this early interview, her focus on the whole child is evident. Which, you know, becomes a hallmark of her later work.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just a few years later, in 2001, we find her tackling exam anxiety, offering advice to parents and educators. It's a reminder that while some concerns are timeless, the way we approach them evolves.
And what's interesting here is that she doesn't just, you know, present the problem. She provides concrete strategies for coping. So this focus on practical solutions becomes another recurring theme in her work. You know, she wants to empower parents and educators and even the children themselves.
I love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of empowerment, in 2003, she won the National Research Award in Spain for her work on a program to prevent violence and promote what's called pro-social behavior in children. This is a big moment, and it really signals this shift in her career toward tackling more complex societal challenges.
It's important to understand why this work was so groundbreaking. At the time, most violence prevention programs were reactive, focusing on punishment after aggression occurred. Garagordibil's program was different. It aimed to proactively teach children empathy, conflict resolution skills, and how to regulate their emotions. You know, essential building blocks for a less violent future.
Absolutely. So she's not just studying these problems. She's actively developing and testing solutions. And we see this focus on intervention continue as we move into the mid-2000s. Where her interviews start to touch on topics like bullying, adolescent violence, and the early influence of media and technology.
And it's remarkable how prescient she was. Remember, this was before smartphones and social media were as ubiquitous as they are today. Yet Garagordibil was already raising concerns about the potential impact of violent video games and other forms of media on young minds.
This next one is both fascinating and a bit heavy. In a 2007 interview, she delves into how children's drawings can actually be used to identify potential signs of maltreatment. It's a powerful example of how even seemingly simple things can offer valuable insights into a child's inner world.
This is a great example of Garagordibil's expertise going beyond traditional research methods. You know, she understands the importance of observing children in their natural environments and using multiple sources of information to understand their experiences.
It's like she's a detective, piecing together clues to help children who might not be able to express what's happening to them directly. It's pretty incredible. And it makes you realize how much attention and careful observation are needed when working with young people.
And this attentiveness extends to broader societal issues as well.
Okay.
As we move into the late 2000s, we see Garagordibil increasingly addressing topics like sexism and gender stereotypes within families. This shows her understanding that child development isn't just about individual factors. It's deeply intertwined with the social context.
So true. And it makes you wonder, what were some of the specific ways she suggested families could combat those harmful stereotypes? Because let's be honest, those patterns can be deeply ingrained.
Well, in a 2011 interview, she actually recommends starting early, encouraging families to expose children to diverse role models and challenge traditional gender roles in everyday life.
Okay.
It's about creating a more equitable environment from the very beginning.
I love that she's taking such a proactive approach.
Yeah.
Not waiting for problems to arise, but instead trying to build a foundation for healthy development.
Yeah.
And positive relationships.
Exactly. And this leads us to the 2010s. Where Gary Gordeville's work becomes increasingly focused on the digital age and the rise of social media.
Oh, wow. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah. It's like a whole new world opens up, right?
Yeah.
As we enter the 2010s, the whole landscape of childhood and adolescence is rapidly changing with the rise of social media.
Right.
And Gary Gordeville doesn't shy away from this new territory at all.
Yeah.
She dives right in.
You can really see her adaptability.
Yeah.
In a 2012 interview, she's already discussing cyberbullying.
Oh, wow.
Among Basque secondary school students.
Okay.
And this is before many people were even using the term cyberbullying.
Right.
So she was truly on the cutting edge.
Yeah, she was ahead of the curve on that one.
Totally. And she doesn't just define the problem.
Right.
She delves into its specific dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
In this interview, she highlights how the anonymity and reach of online platforms can amplify the harm of bullying.
Right.
Making it even more insidious and difficult to address than traditional forms.
Yeah, it's almost like a whole other beast.
Yeah, exactly. It's like she's opening her eyes to a whole new layer of complexity.
Right.
In how children interact and experience conflict.
Totally.
I'm curious, though, did she offer any strategies for combating this new form of bullying?
Absolutely. She emphasizes the need for a multi-pronged approach.
Okay.
Involving parents, educators, and the tech companies themselves.
Okay, so like everybody working together?
Yeah, everybody's got to be on board.
Yeah.
She advocates for clear school policies against cyberbullying.
Right.
Education for students on digital citizenship.
Uh-huh.
And parental monitoring of online activity.
Okay.
She even suggests working with platform developers to create safer online spaces.
That's a really comprehensive approach.
It is.
It shows she understands that this isn't just a problem for schools or families to solve alone.
Right.
It requires a societal shift in how we think about online behavior and responsibility.
Exactly.
Wow. And her work continues to evolve with the changing digital landscape.
Oh, yeah.
In a 2016 interview, she even tackles the influence of social media on body image.
Oh, interesting.
Specifically examining how Barbie's evolving image, you know, with different body types and careers, might impact young girls' perceptions of themselves.
That's so interesting.
I know, right?
It really is.
It reminds me of how she spoke about the importance of toys.
Yeah.
In early childhood development.
Uh-huh.
It seems like she's always looking for those everyday examples.
Yeah.
To illustrate deeper psychological and societal influences.
You're exactly right. And in this case, she's highlighting the subtle ways in which even seemingly positive changes, like diversifying Barbie's image, can still be intertwined with complex messages about appearance and societal expectations.
And it makes you think about all the images and messages kids are bombarded with online.
Oh,
it's a constant stream of influence.
It is.
And it's crucial to have experts like Gary Gordeville helping us understand how to navigate it all.
Absolutely. And her work doesn't just focus on girls
right.
in several interviews throughout the 2010s.
Okay.
She also addresses the pressures boys face to conform to certain masculine ideals, highlighting the need for gender equity and challenging stereotypes for all children.
It's clear that she's not afraid to tackle difficult and often sensitive topics.
Right.
I'm remembering that 2019 interview.
Okay.
Where she discussed the complexities of dealing with aggressors in bullying situations and the challenges of punishment.
That's a great example of her nuanced approach.
Yeah.
She acknowledges that simply punishing bullies isn't always effective. In fact, it can sometimes backfire and lead to more aggression.
Wow.
Instead, she advocates for understanding the underlying reasons behind the bullying behavior.
Okay.
Addressing those root causes. Mm-hmm. And providing support and guidance for both the victim and the aggressor.
It's about seeing the whole picture.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not just reacting to the surface behavior.
Yeah.
But understanding the context.
Right.
And looking for solutions that promote real change and growth.
Totally. And this focus on the whole child and their well-being leads us to her more recent work on mental health in educational settings.
Okay.
It's really fascinating to see that shift, right? To thinking about mental health in schools, it's so important.
It's amazing to see how Garrett Gortabile's work has consistently addressed the most pressing issues facing young people, from the rise of cyberbullying to this growing awareness of the importance of mental health.
Yes, her 2022 interview on mental health in schools is particularly insightful.
Okay.
You know, she emphasizes that we can't just expect children to thrive academically
without
also attending to their emotional well-being.
Yeah.
She advocates for schools to provide more mental health resources.
Yeah.
Train teachers to recognize signs of distress and create a culture of support and open communication.
It makes me think about her work on bullying prevention.
Right.
It's all connected, right?
Exactly.
A supportive school environment where kids feel safe and respected can go a long way in preventing bullying and promoting mental well-being.
Absolutely. And she doesn't just talk about these issues in a general sense.
Right.
She offers concrete solutions.
Yeah.
For example, in that 2022 interview, she specifically recommends implementing social-emotional learning programs in schools.
Interesting.
Yeah. These programs teach kids essential skills like self-awareness, empathy, responsible decision-making, and relationship building.
So it's about giving kids the tools they need to navigate the complexities of life.
Exactly.
Both online and offline.
Yeah. It's not just about protecting them from harm.
Right.
It's about empowering them to thrive.
Totally.
And this brings us to her most recent appearance
in
2023 on International Bullying Prevention Day.
It seems fitting that she would participate in this event.
It does.
Given how much of her career has been dedicated to understanding and addressing this issue.
Yeah, for sure.
It really shows her ongoing commitment.
It does.
I'm curious, though, did she introduce any new perspectives in this interview?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it more of a continuation of her previous work?
It was a bit of both.
Okay.
You know, she reiterated the importance of creating safe and supportive school environments and emphasized the need for early intervention.
Right.
But what struck me was her focus on the role of bystanders.
Interesting.
In bullying situations.
Ah, so not just focusing on the bully and the victim.
Right.
But empowering those who witnessed the bullying to take action.
Exactly. She argued that bystanders have a responsibility to speak up, report the behavior to adults, and support the victim.
Yeah.
She even suggested that bystanders can sometimes be more effective than adults in stopping bullying.
Wow.
Because they have more social influence among their peers.
That's such an interesting point.
It is.
It really highlights the power of peer dynamics.
Yeah.
And the importance of creating a culture where kids feel comfortable standing up for what's right.
It all comes back to fostering those pro-social behaviors.
Yeah.
She was researching back in the early 2000s.
It's a powerful reminder that these skills are essential for building a more just and compassionate society.
Absolutely.
As we wrap up this deep dive,
I'm
struck by how much Garrett Gortabile's accomplished in her career.
She's done so much.
And how her work has consistently reflected the evolving needs of children and adolescents.
She's been a true pioneer in the field.
Yeah.
Pushing boundaries, tackling tough topics, and always advocating for the well-being of young people.
So as we leave our listeners with a final thought,
right.
I want to ask this.
Mm-hmm.
How has the public's understanding of childhood development and the challenges young people face evolved over the past three decades?
It's a question worth pondering.
It is.
You know, perhaps Garrett Gortabile's work has helped us see children.
Yeah. Not just as passive recipients of care.
Right.
But as active agents in their own development, capable of shaping their world and contributing to a better future.
What a powerful way to end this deep dive.
It is.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through Maida Garrett Gortabile's incredible career.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you've gained some valuable insights.
Yeah.
And are feeling inspired to learn even more.
Until next time, keep exploring